This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Here we go on a Thursday. Welcome in. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Abby, for the next 2 hours, we have a jam-packed program this evening. We are going to be joined coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Former Cardinals outfielder, now an analyst with FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. Mark Sweeney is going to join us in just a little while. Later on in the hour, we are going to be joined by Giovanni Savarese. He is a former MLS head coach, now working as an analyst for Apple TV and MLS Season Pass. He'll give us some thoughts on what's going on with City as they make a coaching change. Into the 7 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little Battlehawks football. We're going to be talking with Battlehawks tight end Jake Sutherland. And then at 7:35, Lutz Pfannenstiel is going to be with us, the sporting director for City SC. As I got the chance to chat with him earlier today, I'll play you that conversation coming up at 7:35, where we talk through everything that went into the decision of the team to move on from Olaf Melberg and where they go from here and what you can expect from this team moving forward, because they have been an uninteresting team. They've not been a very good team in a while, and now they're going to try to find a bit of a spark moving forward. So we'll have that conversation. We'll play that conversation for you again coming up at about 7:35. As always, if you want to join us, you can do so. Call, text, tweet, or leave a message on the video stream. If you call or text, the phone number is 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. Or, like I said, video stream if you're watching on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. You can just leave a comment in the chat, and we will keep an eye on those as we go along through the day. Cardinals are in a really good spot. And we just talked, we went through a lot of the main sort of storylines about this team during the Redbird rush hour. And I'm impressed with their ability to find ways to win games that even in some good seasons that they had, they probably would not have won. I mean, it is remarkable. It is, and we use that word way too often. I use that word way too often. To me, everything's remarkable. So I need a better word than remarkable. I'm the boy who cried wolf when it comes to remarkable. Like, I need a better word than that because I use it so often. But it is truly remarkable, exponentially times whatever, that they have trailed in each of their last five wins. They have trailed at some point. We need to get the Elias Sports Bureau on this and see what is the Cardinals' record for most consecutive wins where they were trailing in the game at some point in time. Ollie talked about this during the post-game media conference a little bit last night. And look, when things are going well, everything sounds and feels good, right? Like, I get that. And things are going really, really well for this team. They are on an incredible run right now in terms of the 18 of the last 23, whatever it is. But Ollie talked about it last night about how, you know, this team doesn't give up and this team always feels like they're going to be able to win. More often than not, when you hear a manager say that, it's a cliche. It's what you're supposed to say. You go to any manager in baseball outside of, you know, the Rockies or the White Sox or maybe the Pirates, I don't know. And you talk to the manager, and you can probably, you can probably go down a line of questioning with that manager where you can eke out of them. Oh, yeah, our team never thinks they're out of a game. Our team never gives up. Like, those are true sports cliches that, you know, leadership always says about their group. Right now, the Cardinals are making it out to be a true thing. And a couple of my favorite wins this year are games, I think you see it sometimes. I don't think I know. It is a very common thing in sports for you to be down, for you to come back, but then the other team answers your comeback, and that's just it. I think there is something more impressive about a team that comes back, loses the lead, or gives up more runs. Like yesterday, the Cardinals were down 3-0. They score two to get back within one. It's a game again. And then what happens? The Orioles score the run again. All of a sudden, it's a multiple run lead. Like, a lot of times in sports, when that happens, that's kind of it. Like, there's almost this emotional or mental letdown of, well, we gave it our best shot. We made a run. We did what we ever could do, and it's just not going to be our night. And that's not what the Cardinals have done. So yesterday's game, and I mentioned this last night when I was hosting the Extra Innings show, the Philadelphia Phillies game where Sonny Gray was on the mound, it played out kind of the same way of what I'm talking about here, where the Phillies got out to a lead in that game, if you remember, and then the Cardinals, I think they pulled even. Maybe they even took a... Yeah, I think they pulled even in that game. Yeah, they were down 5-2. It doesn't matter. So they got back in it, and then what happens? Sonny Gray went back out, and he gave up more runs, and the Cardinals were still able to find that like second surge and eventually win that game. They had that second surge yesterday. And to me, that's just a little bit different. To me, that shows that there is some truth in this whole, well, we never give up, and the whole, we always think we're in a game. The stuff that you always hear from leadership in sports that seems very cliche, and we'll see how the rest of the year plays out, but to me it doesn't seem so cliche for the Cardinals because of the way they're coming back in these games and even sometimes getting knocked down for a second time in a game and still finding a way to go ahead and surge forward and indeed get that win. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me if you'd like, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. We will take a break, and when we return, we are going to talk Cardinals baseball with former Cardinals outfielder, current analyst for FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. Mark Sweeney is with us in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Off night for the Cardinals. They're back at tomorrow when they play a weekend series in Arlington against the Texas Rangers. Very happy to welcome on right now. He is a former Cardinals outfielder, now works as a studio analyst and also a game analyst with FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. It's our friend Mark Sweeney. Mark, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. How much have you enjoyed this run over the last 3 weeks to a month or so that this team has been on, as they've been playing some great baseball and doing so many things well, and it seems like they're finding different ways to win every night?
Yeah, they are, Matt. I think it's just realizing that this team had a goal coming in to give some guys some playing time, but we all know, and if you've been in the game for long enough, you understand there's good stories and there's sometimes not so great stories. This team has really checked a lot of boxes early in the season. They played great. They played together. And on the broadcasts and the pregame shows, so we always talk about the identity aspect of the game. And sometimes teams don't really realize their identity. This team definitely does. They have fun playing the game. They play hard and they have no quit in them.
Since May 14th, it's obviously a tiny sample size. It's only 13 games. Jordan Walker's hitting .333 with an OPS that's just below 900. What have you seen from him in this period, and do you feel like this is the start of something, or is this just something that you kind of see again in that small sample size?
Well, first off, I'm proud of him because there's been a lot of pressure on Jordan Walker. We all understand the severity of it. When you get to the big leagues, everyone assumes that you're ready. And at a young age, sometimes that comes a little later than others. Sometimes it comes early, and then you have to adjust from that. What I've seen is a more confident guy, a shorter swing. But more importantly, he's had some success at times where the teams needed it. And there's no better feeling as a player to come through when you're struggling. Because everyone, if you've played this game long enough, you go through struggles that you go to the hotel, you stare at the ceiling, and you go, what am I doing? I just don't understand it. And it becomes challenging, not only for Jordan Walker, but for all of us that have experienced that. But I'm proud of him. I think Brant Brown and the hitting coaches have done a great job with him, going back to shortening his swing, but also connecting both his legs and his mechanics with his upper body. He's close to him. The biggest thing, Matt, as we all see, and we see it all the time, is he's going to have to stay off that slider. Mm-hmm. So when you have a shorter swing, you have the ability to wait a little longer. And that's what the benefit is. You're going to wait a little longer, and you're going to be able to get those bad sliders and hopefully stay off some other sliders. That being said, everyone has a kryptonite as well. I think everyone understands that it's a hard game, and when you're swinging out of the strike zone, it gets even more hard. But he has been excellent as far. He's come through huge for this team.
How tough is it to take something that you're working on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and implement it at 7 o'clock at night?
Yeah, and I think that's it too, Maddie. I think when you realize that you can have a good cage day, you can have a good routine, and you can feel good about yourself, and then you go into the game and they execute better than you. And that's what it really comes down to. But then it becomes dealing with the failures. So, yes, the transfer into cage work, to batting practice, to game is real. And once you do that, you feel comfortable about your routine. You feel comfortable about the results and taking 3 or 4 quality at bats every night. You're going to start realizing that things are going to start turning. And that's exactly what Jordan's going through now. Sustaining it is another thing that you have to do.
The Cardinals, of their last 5 wins, they have trailed at some point in all 5 of those games. They now have 14 come from behind wins. We love to quantify everything in this game, and rightfully so. But when you get to, you know, stats and moments like those, it's hard to quantify why a team has that innate ability to not give up on a game and find ways to get those late runs and come back.
Yeah, I try to stay away from the stats because the stats kind of even out, I would say, throughout a full year. So we're not at that point. And I say that with all due respect, Maddie. I look at guys and their process. I look at the adjustments, and we are saying how great Brant Brown and his staff are doing, because it's the in-game adjustments that you see. And typically, if you watch a lot of major league games, and I do, I watch a lot of other games, other teams, you don't see that a lot. You don't see in-game adjustments. You see guys that just swing for their area. And if they don't catch their area, it's going to be a tough night. Runners in scoring position has been a struggle throughout baseball. But it isn't for the Cardinals. They are implementing a strategy, a plan, and what they're trying to do. And they're executing it. Last night is a great example. At the beginning of the game, they were struggling. They were getting a lot of swing and miss. They were getting foul balls. They were getting into pitcher's counts. And the results weren't good. In-game adjustments between innings 3, 4, 5, it clicked. And that's what they're doing. They have the ability to change their plan, go about their business a different way, and also communicate with each other. Because I heard Mason Wynn talk about it, which I think is great. When Mason Wynn says, you know, I just struck out, and sometimes it's hard to come in and tell people what it looks like, what it feels like. Well, when you're hitting first or second, you want to give some knowledge to your teammates. And they can utilize that, and you don't have to wait around for your second at bat. These guys are doing it, and I think their in-game adjustments have been really, really fun to watch.
Did you have a spell? When you look at Wynn, and maybe it's just a coincidence that he was coming along as he got moved to the two spot, but when you look at his numbers since going into the two spot, they've been really, really good. He's got a .323 average and an OPS at .950. He was not hitting there when he's down in the nine spot. Is there something to be said for comfort to a certain part of the lineup? Did you experience that at all? Like, is there any chicken and egg here with he's in the two spot and he's hitting?
Yeah, there's comfort, and there's also protection behind you. There's so many different elements. I mean, what Brendan Donovan is doing behind him changes his at-bat, and I'm a big believer in that. I'm not saying that Mason Wynn is successful because of Brendan Donovan. You have to have your different at-bats. But I love the fact that there's some cohesiveness at the top of the order. And we saw how good Mason Wynn was in the leadoff spot last year. It's just Lars Nupar has been outstanding when it comes to taking leadoff at bats versus righty and lefty. And if you can have a constant at the top of your order and you don't have to switch because of platoon matchups, it benefits the whole lineup. Then you start looking at Mason Wynn in the two hole to be able to go the other way, to be able to pick your spots and slug. And on the pull side, it's been really fun to watch. Obviously, timing is everything when it comes to this game. And I think the organization and Ollie definitely have that perfect timing. And it's been a light switch for the offense.
Final thing for Mark Sweeney, analyst with FanDuel Sports Network Midwest, former Cardinals outfielder. The bullpen's been really good, and yesterday it was really good when guys were used in kind of uncomfortable spots. Kyle Leahy coming in the fifth inning, it's really good when they've got the standard availability, and you can go 7-8-9 with Leahy, Maton, and Helsley. But they've been really successful here recently. Is there something to be learned by, you know, Oliver? They moved Ryan Fernandez down, and they did some small things, but for the most part, they kind of stayed the course when the waters were unsettled, and it eventually kind of came in. And, you know, people even like me, like I was looking at it and saying, what can be done to change things in the bullpen? Yeah. And it seemed like they didn't really need change. They just needed to go through those rough waters. Is there something to be learned with how Ollie has handled this entire bullpen situation from start to where we're at right now?
Yeah, there is. And I say this because there's constant communication. Dusty Blake and his staff has been just as good as the offense. I talk offense a lot because obviously that's more what I know. But you start looking at the communication factors, the adjustments JoJo Romero and John King have made to enhance the bullpen. When they enhance their jobs, people start falling into their roles. And we hear this a lot. The communication part of this organization and this coaching staff is really good. But when you have guys that go out there and do their job and bridge that gap to Ryan Helsley and do their jobs where they fit and where they land, no matter what inning you're taking, that's the reason why I think Kyle Leahy has been outstanding. Phil Maton, to your point and to your what you said, has been a really good godsend to get swing and miss and take on those huge at bats. It's just one of those things. I think they've understood communication. They've understood they had to have some patience, but also now when you start winning games and you win close ones, it's magnified and your confidence just starts brewing. And Matty, I think this is a group that understands and they get along with each other. They know what their role is. They take the ball and they do their job. And when you bridge the gap to an all-star closer like Ryan Helsley, I think you're going to win a lot more games than you're going to lose.
He is Mark Sweeney. You see him on TV on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest, sometimes in the studio, sometimes doing the game analyst work. Mark, always appreciate the time. Hopefully we'll see you at the ballpark soon.
Matty, I appreciate you having me on, and thank you. Appreciate it.
That's Mark Sweeney joining us here on the program. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us. We're going to be kind of bouncing back and forth throughout the entire show today between Cardinals baseball and also City SC. This is our first opportunity to do a show since the firing of former City SC coach Olaf Melberg. We're going to talk with Giovanni Savarese. He is an analyst with Apple TV and MLS Season Pass. He's going to join us coming up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line after this here on KMOX.
Back
back at it on KMOX as we roll on with a Graybar Sports Open Line we are efforting right now. Gio Savarese says he is expected. We expect to have him with us in just a little while. Former head coach for the Portland Timbers, so somebody who has been a head coach in Major League Soccer. Looking forward to talking to him about his thoughts on City SC making a coaching change. And look, there's a lot of people who I think don't completely understand Major League Soccer and don't understand the ins and outs of what goes on during the coaching changes and things like that. Because look, the coaching churn happens all the time in Major League Soccer. Happens all the time. And with this happening so often with City, you kind of wonder, how odd is this? And I think there is some oddity to it because it's a bunch of coaches in a short amount of time, especially when your first head coach had unprecedented success in his first year. And then you moved on to an interim guy who had success when he took over after the first guy had kind of fallen off. So, you know, lots of success early from Carnell, then not so much. And then a good amount of success from Hackworth, and then he doesn't get a job. And then you go with a guy who kind of didn't seem to fit the organization, but he got the job and it didn't work. And now they're into another interim situation, and we'll see what's going to happen from there. So it's an odd thing to watch what has happened with the different kind of the evolution of all the different coaches that we've seen in a very short amount of time from City SC. And with that, like I said, we're happy to bring on somebody who has been in that position, had a long-term tenure as the head coach of the Portland Timbers. He is Gio Savarese. He joins us right now. Gio, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Very good. It's a pleasure to connect with you.
What is your general takeaway on what's happened here with City SC, where Olaf Melberg basically gets a half season, very little success, and it didn't seem like the team was getting better, and it felt like the things he was doing kind of went against what City wanted to do, you know, overall from a system standpoint, and then they move on. How do you assess what City has done and the decision that they made to go ahead and make a coaching change?
I mean, it's always difficult in those moments, you know, to point one thing. I believe that the idea, first of all, of Olaf was to be strong defensively. I think at the beginning of the season, we saw a team that prioritized first being defensive-minded. And then little by little, that will grow into being a team that could attack, that could find good opportunities to move forward. But the team, I feel that never moved, you know, in that direction. And then I think the results, when you don't get good results game after game, the confidence goes away. Players, you know, they have to continue to work, and it becomes a difficult environment, and it's not easy to be able to manage those moments. And I think when we see the games, winning one game in about 10 matches, it's just a difficult situation to manage, you know, from the players and all that. So I think it's always difficult when you just prioritize one thing, and then all of a sudden you are not able to evolve from what you wanted to do. So I think it's you know, it's been very difficult for the team to be able to get good results.
What do you make of just taking a step back and looking at the entire existence of this organization, where Bradley Carnell led them to the best expansion year that any team has ever had in MLS, and then he gets let go that next year halfway through the season when they're not having success, and they were better under John Hackworth, but then he doesn't get the full-time opportunity. Then they go to Olaf. They give him a half season. You were a head coach in this league. What would be your viewpoint of the fact that City is churning through coaches at the rate that they are?
That's a good question. What I can tell you is the first year of St. Louis, we were all surprised in the way the team was able to, in such a short amount of time, to be able to perform in a way to stay at the top of the table. Being very competitive and being very difficult to be able to play against. One thing I remember when I was in Portland in 2021, we were in a game that we lost against Seattle at home 6-2. And I remember that the organization was brave enough to be able to support me, to back me, and they didn't make any decisions to get me out, but they gave me confidence to continue. And that year we ended in MLS, you know, Cup final. And so what I want to say is that sometimes it is important to believe in a direction and just stay steady on that. And I think, you know, what I have seen in this team, in this organization, is that it has a phenomenal fan base, and that the star of MLS was very, very good. And now to where we are at this point, it's just people have to analyze what went wrong and why went towards this direction.
Well, Lutz Pfannenstiel, the sporting director for City SC, has made it very clear that they were not playing the style of soccer under Olaf Melberg that they want to play, and they're hoping to move back in that direction. And they think that from a personnel standpoint, there's more that they can do with this group of players to do that. How long does that take? As somebody who has coached, how long does it take for an interim coach to walk in who wants to do some things significantly different and to get a team playing that kind of style of soccer? What's that process look like?
When a coach is hired with our own organization, there has to be the understanding or there has to be the mindset from the sporting director and the coach to follow the same direction of the style of play that it has been installed, or the idea that from the beginning this club wanted to see this team playing. Sometimes you can go a little bit away from it because of the players that you have or it's any situation in order to build little by little, but you always have to be able to go back to the idea of, you know, what the fans are all about, what reflects, you know, in them, the team, and what from the beginning was the idea that you wanted, because that's why you hire the players, to be able to play in certain style of play. But when you go too far away from this idea, and then all of a sudden you're not in line with your sporting director or with the club, that's when the problems start. There's a lot of misunderstanding between the players. There's you lose the connection all around, the chemistry of the team, and at the end of the day, there's no confidence, and that is, I think, the worst thing that a team can have.
This Saturday, they're going to play their first game since Olaf Melberg was moved on from, and they're going to play host to San Jose, so they get the energy of a home matchup. Are there some things, as you've watched City this year, are there some small tweaks that they can make right away that will give them the opportunity to maybe have a little bit more success right away, specifically this weekend against San Jose?
Definitely. I believe always that when there's changes, there's always a reaction. And players at that particular time, they feel also the responsibility as well, that there's always more that can be done. One thing, though, that I believe is that when you allow the players to be a little more free, that they can be more attacking-minded, that you still organize the defense, but you give them the possibility for them to build more opportunities to score goals. There's a change on the mindset that players get happy and they want to it's not uneasy to be able to play that way. And I believe that if that is the direction from the team, especially on the next game coming up, what the team is going to want to build, I think it will be a lot easier to make sure that the players believe in the direction that the club is taking them after Olive and going into this direction.
Gio Savarese, he is an analyst on MLS 360, both Spanish and English analyst on the Apple TV package. Appreciate your time. Give a plug, certainly, for the MLS package on Apple TV and what folks can expect out of it, as they are given an opportunity not just to watch City SC, but watch basically every single game in the league.
It's been phenomenal from Apple TV to be able to show all the games and provide the possibility to be able to broadcast the entire league. The league is growing tremendously, and I wanted to wish all the best to all the fans in San Luis, hoping that things are going to change and continue to go into the direction that the club started with. And all the best, and it's always a pleasure to connect with you.
Yeah, Gio, thank you so much for your time. Giovanni Savarese. We appreciate him spending some time with us. A former MLS head coach. He was the coach in Portland for a good amount of time. He got there in 2017, left there in 2023, was the coach for 216 games there in Portland. Had a whole lot of success there. And, yeah, just an opportunity to talk with him about what goes through a team's thinking when they make the decision to move on from a coach, which City has done now a couple times here over the last 2 years. First Bradley Carnell, then not giving the job to John Hackworth, and now moving on from Olaf Melberg as well. So it's something that's happened a good number of times. We'll talk a little more about City SC coming up next hour at about 7:35 as their sporting director, Lutz Pfannenstiel, is going to be a guest on the program. We'll take one more break for this hour, come back. We'll talk a little more Cardinals before we wrap up hour number one of the program. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we start to wrap up hour number one of the program. We have a busy hour number two as well, as we are going to be joined at about 7:20 by Battlehawks tight end Jake Sutherland. Battlehawks getting ready for their final regular season matchup, and then they hope to play two postseason games. Each of those games would be at the Dome in St. Louis, so an opportunity for them to play in front of their home crowd in the postseason. But we'll talk with Jake Sutherland coming up at 7:20, and then at 7:35, Lutz Pfannenstiel, the sporting director for City SC, he's going to join us. A conversation that I had with him earlier today, recorded it on the phone earlier today, and we'll play that back for you coming up at 7:35. And if you want even more City talk beyond that, at 8 o'clock tonight, it is City Spotlight. Jen Cease will be here, and she's going to do an entire hour of nothing but City talk. So there's lots of when you make a coaching change, when what's going on with this team is going on, there's a lot to talk about. So we'll keep that conversation going, including the Cardinals conversation. I've been thinking about this a lot with the Cardinals. And look, they've been playing great baseball. You're fine with where they are from a record standpoint. You're fine with the amount of games they're winning. Like, there's not a lot of reason to nitpick things. But the nitpickers out there have kind of glommed on to two things here recently, or two individuals. Very recently on one of them, Miles Michaelis, who did not look good yesterday. I think you give a pass to Michaelis I'm not telling you he was good yesterday. He wasn't. He got some important outs yesterday. Like, there were times where that game could have kind of exploded in the other direction and Michaelis got some big outs. But the final line is the final line. The numbers tell the story. Four innings, four runs, nine hits. Thank goodness the Cardinals have an off day today to kind of make up for the fact that they had to get five innings out of their bullpen yesterday, and you're able to kind of press the reset button. So a little bit of focus on Michaelis, just because there's a bit of a bad taste in some fans' mouth based off what Michaelis did over the last 2 years, and then yesterday kind of looked like that. Again, I give him very much a free pass. He's still got a sub-4 ERA with yesterday's performance. He's still got, in the month of May, with that performance inside of it, he's got a 3.08 ERA. He's put together a really, really good year where he had one really bad start against Boston, a couple so-so starts, and for the most part has been pretty good. The other guy that people mention is Andre Pallante. And Pallante has very much been up and down in what he has done recently. And Pallante's last start against Baltimore, he went 5 2/3 innings, allowing 4 runs, 3 earned on 6 hits. His ERA in the month of May is 4.34. Not that that's bad, but when you compare it to what some of the other starters have given, it's not quite as good. But he's got some really good starts in there. He had the start against Washington where he gave up 2 runs and 7 1/3. The start against Kansas City where he gave up 2 runs and 7 innings. So I have a really hard time like going after these guys. I have a really hard time saying that Miles Michaelis shouldn't be in the rotation or Andre Pallante shouldn't be in the rotation. I think that these are guys who are giving you chances to win. Now, there's two things that are just kind of hanging out there. First off, Michael McGreevy. And McGreevy has been very good at Memphis, and he's obviously been very good when he gets the opportunity in the big leagues. This year, he's only had one opportunity, and he's gone 5 2/3 innings without giving up a hit, without giving up a run, and only one hit. And even when you look at what he has done from a minor league standpoint this year, it's been pretty good. He's 6-1 with a 3.02 ERA. His last time out against Durham, he gave up 1 run on 6 hits. Clearly, Michael McGreevy is a major league pitcher, but the way the roster is set up right now, there's not really a spot for him, and you have to make sure that you can maintain whatever level of starting pitching depth that you can have. So that's where he stays at AAA for the time being, almost for the better of the club, because if you put him into the rotation and move, let's say you want to move on from somebody, you can't move on from Miles Michaelis without basically like actually moving on from him. I guess Pallante is a little bit of a different choice because you could send him to AAA, but again, neither of those guys have really done anything yet to deserve to lose a spot. I am curious if the Cardinals take an opportunity to get McGreevy a couple starts in the month of June. Because in the month of June, you only have 2 off days, and they're both on Mondays. So you'll have an off day on Monday, then play the rest of the week, then play the rest of the next week, have another off day on a Monday, play the rest of the week and the next week. So even with a situation where you would have to send him back down for 10 days, there is certainly an opportunity to, if you can find the roster spot for him, which they can, if you bring him up to get him a spot start here, spot start there, you can keep on kind of your routine of getting most guys that extra day off. You've been able to do that when you did have the 6-man rotation legitimately earlier this year, and then utilizing all the off days. Most guys have been on an extra day of rest. If you give McGreevy 2 starts in the month of June, You can still basically do that sort of thing. And I think that's probably what I am most curious of right now, is if we are going to see that, if they're going to utilize Michael McGreevy a little bit in the month of June as a way for him to get some starts. And a lot of people are clamoring for Steven Matz to get in there as well. For me, I really like the role that Matz is in right now. We'll take a break. Come back for hour number 2 after this here on KMOX.
Welcome to the Strike Zone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Led by Graybar. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. on the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM KMOX.
We are into the 7 o'clock hour of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Not only is the Graybar Sports Open Line, it is a strike zone hour, and we are with you till 8 o'clock this evening. We've got a lot to get to here in this hour. We are going to talk in just a few moments with a Battlehawks tight end, as Jake Sutherland is going to join us, and then City SC Sporting Director Lutz Fahnenstiel is going to join us at about 7:35. Have an opportunity for you to chime in right now if you've got anything to say Cardinals related. We can certainly take your text messages at 314-436-7900, and also we can take your comments on the video stream as well if you would like to get into that. Kyle Sixt, our producer, just brought something to my attention, and it works out well because we need to do Building the Future, which is brought to you by Graybar. Graybar's headquartered in St. Louis is a great place to work. So if you follow along with Cardinals prospects, there's a guy by the name of Joshua Baez, who at one point was considered a top 10 prospect in the organization. He really stalled out at single A, where he just had a real... He made his single-A debut in 2022. We saw him there in 2023. We saw him there in 2024. And we saw him there to start 2025. In that time, he has completely dropped out of the Cardinals prospect rankings. That being said, he has seemingly had a breakthrough. Now, to be fair, when you're playing single-A baseball and you've been around for a while, at some point you're playing against a bunch of guys who are probably younger than you. That plays into it. It's always, you'll see college kids get drafted and they'll go to single A and they'll just dominate. And a lot of times it's because you got 22-year-olds going up against 18-year-olds, and then they're guys who don't really have long-term futures, and they're going to get to double A and they're going to get to triple A, and it's going to be more fair in terms of who they're going up against. I'm not saying that's what's happening with Baez, but this is kind of an interesting development, because Baez this year, playing high A Peoria, had hit 317. He was very active on the bases with 20 stolen bases, only being caught twice, had an OPS of almost 900, and he has now been promoted to double A. So this is going to be the big question here. You know, the old adage in baseball is once you get to double A, you're an injury away from the big leagues. Sometimes that's true. More often than not, it's not true. But it does tell you that there is quite the difference going from single A to double A. You start facing off against, it's a lot tougher to get there, and you start facing some legit arms. So this is going to be really, really interesting to see now for a guy who formerly was a top-level prospect, what he's going to be able to do as he gets to Springfield here moving forward. I got a text message from, or not text message, but a video chat from Nick. And this goes back to a conversation that we had during the Redbird Rush Hour. And we were talking about the future of Nolan Gorman. If you listen to me very much, you know that I think highly of Nolan Gorman's potential. And I think he is young enough that he's still somebody who can break through. I don't want to just see the club throw away Nolan Gorman. He's a legit 30 home run guy who has basically been that guy at one point in the big leagues, but has not been able to replicate it. But it's still inside of him. It's still there. The question is it ever going to come out again? But it's still there. But the cold, hard truth on all of this is the clock is probably running out on Gorman because of the roster alignment that the Cardinals have. Nolan Arenado's not going anywhere. He's just not. And, I mean, maybe if he puts together a really good second half of the season and comes around, maybe they revisit a conversation, or maybe a team gets absolutely desperate for a third baseman and can pick up enough salary. But barring something somewhat unexpected happening, Nolan Arenado is going to be a Cardinal for the foreseeable future, because teams are not going to pick up the amount of money that he's getting paid, and the Cardinals are not going to want to pay him a lot of that money when he's playing for another team. So it's probably just a situation where Arenado's a Cardinal. He's going to come up with the big hit here and there. He's going to continue to play high-level defense, and you're going to have a deep lineup with some other guys who are going to be most responsible for the run output. So that's one reason that Gorman probably doesn't have a spot. And the other is J.J. Weatherholt. And I realize that, you know, you don't want to count the old chickens before they hatch, right? Like, Weatherholt is still somebody who is in double A right now. But Weatherholt is about as close to a can't-miss prospect as the Cardinals have had in a while. And all indications are that at some point in the next year, Weatherholt's going to be the starting second baseman for the Cardinals. He's at double A right now. He's performing well. He'll probably finish out the year at triple A. We had been talking like there was an opportunity for him to maybe make his major league debut this year, the way Mason Wynn did a couple years ago at the end of the season. I think how the team is playing probably factors into that. When you get into September and you get your couple extra roster spots, if you're not playing for anything, then yeah, it makes all the sense in the world to get J.J. Weatherholt in there and let him get his, you know, feet wet at the big league level. If you are somebody who, if you're a team that's playing for something and you've got an opportunity to add to the roster with pieces that can really help you win games, you're going to do that. And not that Weatherholt's not going to help you win games, but you get what I'm saying. There's going to be some guys at AAA who've been on the big league roster throughout the year who can do something for you. So I think the more they win, the less likely it is that Weatherholt is going to be here this year. But he's going to be here at some point. And there's certainly a legitimate possibility that he breaks camp with the team next year as the everyday second baseman for the Cardinals. So what do you do with Nolan Gorman? Oh, yeah, by the way, Ivan Herrera, he is your DH, I think, moving forward more often than not. Maybe he'll catch here and there, but it makes so much more sense to have Herrera as your DH. And when he's not in there, you still have Burleson. You have the Burleson-Contreras thing. You have the Walker thing to figure out. It continues to be a roster logjam, which is better than the opposite. You'd rather have more guys than you can play than not enough guys, but it still is a part of that. So that's kind of the short version, maybe a little bit longer than I meant for it to be when I started talking about it. But that's the short version of what we talked about on Redbird Rush Hour. So Nick sent in a message on the video chat, and he said, if Gorman does end up moving on and then gets right elsewhere and starts hitting 30 or more home runs per year, do you think that's a black eye moving forward on the Cardinals? And I don't. And it's not just because I'm trying to give some sort of free pass to the Cardinals or anything like that. But it is about two things. What's going to be your best roster alignment to get the most out of the Cardinals? And that is going to include Weatherholt at some point. So if you move on from Nolan Gorman because you want to commit to J.J. Weatherholt, I'm fine with that. I don't care what Gorman does. In fact, I'll root for Gorman. Outside of when he's playing the Cardinals, I'll root for Gorman. He's a good guy, and he's had some nice moments for the Cardinals. So, no, I'm not going to be bothered by that at all. And good on another organization if they are able to go ahead and unlock him. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. And we'll see what ends up happening. I do it doesn't take a rocket scientist. Like, all we're doing is counting. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that a roster spot for Gorman, especially once Weatherholt does arrive, it's certainly not a guarantee. Even with his role this year, Gorman doesn't really strike as someone who's going to be comfortable in that bench role that often. And I would think that, I don't think his trade value is high, but I do think because of his ability to hit home runs, he is he's still going to be able to attract you something, because there are going to be a bunch of teams out there that feel like they've got the recipe to unlock Gorman, and if they can do that, they'll go for it. So I don't know if it's him getting traded at the deadline this year, if it's an off-season move. And I, at this point, honestly, I don't, like, what can he even do? If he all of a sudden becomes a 30-plus home run guy, like just snap of the finger, that's all of a sudden who he is, you find a spot, right? You find a spot for him. You'd be dumb not to. But outside of like that happening, what do you do? What do you do? Because Weatherholt's on the way. Got a text message just now from the 314, says, what do you do with Brendan Donovan? Great question. What do you do with him? Because Donovan right now is one of the best players in the National League. Now, I think it's a little bit easier with Donovan because you can bounce him around all over the field. But is that is that really what you want from one of your main core players? Like, this is your guy who's going to hit third for you every day, but he's not going to know what position he's going to play? Like, that's okay, but I don't think it's preferable. I don't think it's the best possible situation. So they've got some things to figure out. They have some things to figure out here moving forward, and I don't know. I don't know how it's all going to play out. I do know, again, this situation is so much better than the alternative. You've got too many guys, and you got more guys coming on the way. That's a good situation to be in. You know, the Herrera, I've talked about this a whole lot because in my eyes, I think it makes a lot of sense for Herrera to be the DH more often than not, just not now, but for the foreseeable future. So that creates a scenario where right now you've got Joel Pozo on the roster as the second catcher. Well, at some point it's probably going to be Pajes and Crooks as your two catchers, but you have kind of a guy who's almost a third catcher who's also your DH. That just, it adds to the roster crunch. It's a good problem to have. You know, when you're sitting there and saying, how do you get Herrera into the lineup every day? That's something that obviously you need to be able to do. It's just, how does that whole thing end up playing out? And we can go on. I am going on and on. We can go on and on about this. For the most part, things like this do end up figuring themselves out. And I would suspect this is going to figure itself out. We also don't know, we don't have a track record yet on how Heim Bloom feels about these players, because he's really the guy who's going to be largely making these decisions, assuming many of these decisions are taking place at the end of the year. If there are decisions to be made at the trade deadline this year, I would think he's going to have a voice in those decisions, especially if it includes, you know, players going away. I don't think John Mozeliak is going to take, say they try to go get a relief pitcher of a certain stature, and another team wants a certain prospect from the Cardinals, and that player, that young player, is one of Heim Bloom's favorite players in the Cardinals organization. I don't think Mo makes that trade when Heim wants somebody to stay in the organization. So that's another part of this whole dynamic moving forward. But isn't it good that we're talking about these things? It's really good that we can talk about these things. If the team stinks, then you're doing nothing but finding runway and not really worrying about who's in the lineup, except for the fact that you want to get these young players the experience. They're still giving young players legitimate experience. That's the thing we've seen with Jordan Walker. I think the difference between Walker and Gorman right now is just Walker has been able to work on stuff in the afternoon in the cage and then try to implement it at night. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. They go back to tweak something else, and then he puts it in. With Gorman, as he's trying to work through his issues, he's not getting as many games to be able to work through the situation, and that's one of the tough parts about what's going on. All right, here's what we've got coming up for the rest of the hour. We still have two more interviews to get to. Up next, we're going to talk with Jake Sutherland. He is a Battlehawks tight end. Battlehawks going into their final weekend of the regular season before they open up the postseason, and they are hoping for a postseason run that includes a championship that would be played here in St. Louis. And then we'll jump back into a little bit of soccer as Lutz Pfannenstiel, the sporting director for City SC, he's going to join us at 7:35, a conversation that I had with him earlier this afternoon. I will replay that at 7:35, and then lots of soccer talk with Jen Cease for a City Spotlight, which is going to begin at 8 o'clock. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. It's a Strike Zone Hour. We talk with Jake Sutherland coming up in just a moment right here on KMOX. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we continue through the evening. This weekend, the Battlehawks are going to wrap up the regular season, but they hope that there's a whole lot of football still left to be played. Happy to be joined right now by tight end Jake Sutherland, who's a big part of this team. Jake, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Of course. I'm good, Matt. How about yourself?
Doing all right. So you guys wrap up the regular season this weekend. Is it a weird game? Like, I know you can't think about things the way I'm about to term this, but it doesn't have really playoff implications. You're playing the team that you're going to see in the first round of the playoffs. Like, what's the mental approach to a game like this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, obviously with no playoff implications, we're able to limit some guys' snaps, give them some rest. But as a team, we want to win this game as much as the next one, as much as the first playoff game, as much as when we get to the championship. We want to go 8-2. We want to have the best record in the UFL. So we're going into this game one and all.
This is probably a better question for coaches than for players, but when you're matching up against a team that you're going to see again a week later and it means so much, is it one of those where you try to win, but you also maybe don't try to show too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think all teams would probably have the same thought process and game plan going into playing a team in back-to-back weeks. Obviously, you don't want to show too much, but like I said, we are going to try to win this game, and I think we're going to do what we can to win this game, whether that's keeping it very basic or complex from a strategy standpoint.
You guys are on one heck of a run right now. In the first four games, you went 2-2, which is fine. But since then, haven't lost a game, six straight wins. Some of these games, you know, last weekend, a dominating win. The week before, you had to, you know, pull one out by just 1 point. You're finding different ways to win on an every week basis. Can you talk to me a little bit about the way this team is playing and this role that you guys are on right now?
Yeah, I think our team cohesion is on another level right now. I think we're all gelling together. And I think we're playing very complementary football, offense, defense, special teams. I think our special teams has been solid all year. But whenever our offense is struggling, our defense steps up in many ways, and vice versa with our defense and offense. And like you said, we're just finding ways to win. I think that's one of the most important things in such a team game in sport, is just whatever it takes to win, whatever it takes to come out with a W on top is what you got to do.
All right, so your son Slade was born right before the season last year. I've got an 11-month-old at home. I've got a 6-year-old at home. I've been through everything that you're being through. I can't imagine going through being a pro athlete, being away from home, doing everything that you're doing. What has this been like for you from a personal standpoint, where you've got so much going on at home and you've got a job that probably isn't really conducive to the home life?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult, but the reason I am able to do this is because I have an absolute rock star of a wife who's an even better mother. I wouldn't be able to be in the position that I am and be able to do the things that I do without her. It's definitely difficult. It's very, very hard. But I also look at it as a way to be a role model for him, whatever future endeavors that he has when he gets older, which is kind of hard to think about at the moment.
Is like, I always get a kick out of it when my kids will sit there and like watch sports with me for a little bit. It's like, oh, okay, maybe they're gonna like baseball, maybe they're gonna like football. Have you done that a little bit yet? Is Slade sitting down and watching a little football on TV, or locked into the year games, that sort of thing?
Yeah, my wife usually has the games on whenever we play. When it's not like nap time or sleep time for him, obviously he won't be coming to the DC game because it'll be 8 p.m. Yeah. But we got some sports on. We got a baseball and a basketball and a football for him. He usually carries a football around a lot too. So we've introduced him to some sports in the short span of life he's had so far.
Speaking of baseball, it was, you know, Battle Hawks Day at Busch Stadium just a few weeks ago. I know you were there, took BP. A little birdie told me you almost hit one out. Is that right?
Yeah. I played some baseball back in my day. I played football, basketball, baseball growing up all through until high school. I did try to play in college as well, but the schedule, our football and baseball schedule wasn't really meshed. But I wouldn't be opposed to a 10-day contract with someone just to show them what I can do. I think I still got the baseball itch.
All right. Battle Hawks tight end, future baseball player Jake Sutherland, continuing to join us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. Now, you got, because of your position, you're a tight end, you get the opportunity to be coached directly by your head coach in Anthony Beck, because he oversees tight ends. He was a tight end. He played in St. Louis with the Rams as a tight end. What's it like for you kind of having that more direct connection with your head coach, because he also serves as your position coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. One thing I always say about Beck is he's the same position coach as he is a head coach. He's a great leader, great mentor, and fortunately for myself, And I've been able to be with him and be coached by him for 3 years now. Obviously, he was an unbelievable tight end, played at the highest level possible. So it's great to learn from him and, I mean, learn from him on and off the field, to be honest, because he's a great, like I said, mentor, father, coach, everything.
Not to look past this weekend, because this weekend is important, but obviously the postseason and the postseason fate is already set. Not only do you know who you'll play in that first round, but you also know that that game's going to be in St. Louis. And if you win that game, the championship game, the league championship game, is going to be in St. Louis as well. It was the same scenario last year. You didn't get there. Is that, how much of a motivating factor is that for this team, that not only are you guys going for a championship, but you've got an opportunity to potentially make that run in front of St. Louis fans?
Yeah, I mean, being able to make that run in front of St. Louis, in front of our fans, I think is huge. Not only for the league, but for our city and team. It definitely gives us an edge. And as far as last year is concerned, I mean, we kind of have that chip on our shoulder. We felt like we could have made it to the championship and won it last year, but we do believe we have a better team this year that is definitely more capable and set up to really make that run and get it done.
Jake Sutherland, he is a tight end with the Battlehawks. They're going to be on the road against D.C. coming up this Friday, but then they're going to be back at home for the XFL championship game, followed, hopefully, if they win that game, for the UFL championship game, the XFL conference championship game the week before. Jake, thanks so much for taking the time. Best of luck over the next few weeks, and hopefully we can check in again down the line.
Of course, of course. Thanks for having me.
That's Jake Sutherland. He is a tight end with the Battlehawks. Again, they're in action on Friday night on the road against D.C., and then the XFL Conference Championship game will be against D.C. as well. That will be in St. Louis no matter what. We'll take a break. We got a lot more to get to on this edition of Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It has been a crazy day for City SC. A press conference earlier today. You've heard much of it, but we're really happy to be able to welcome on the sporting director for City SC joining us. Like I said, on a very busy day, it's Lutz Fannenstiel. Lutz, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you doing this with us today.
Always welcome.
What has this process been like for you? I know when this season got started, even going back to the hiring of Olaf Melberg, there is no way that you thought that on May 29th you'd be part of a press conference like this today. Can you take me through where you're at almost from an emotional standpoint going through all this?
You know, it's always difficult to let somebody go. And with Olaf only being here in charge for 5 months, it's obviously double painful. But sometimes in football or in sports, you need to make tough decisions, and looking at the results, looking at hardly also at the performances. I think it's something which we had to look at it in recent weeks. The developments were not necessarily that positive. And, you know, I really wanted to focus on getting our team back into the philosophy which we had in there since day one, since I came in. It, like, for me, was always the unnegotiable to have a clear philosophy, a clear DNA, a clear playing style. And I think we just have to get back to the roots, have to get back really to the basics, to start all over again. Yeah, I mean, obviously not easy, you know, if you're coming on a long streak like that, when players start to be frustrated, start to doubt themselves. But that's what I mean by finding the right moment to have a reset, to really start believing in each other again, and having still 19 games to go. There's a lot of football have to be played, so be ready for the challenge.
I promise you our conversation will focus more towards what's coming up and not what just happened, but I have to ask, there's been so much talk about maybe the system or the way the team's been playing recently doesn't go along with what City does and the system you want played. How does that happen? How do you hire a coach who ends up not running the team or not doing things the way that you were hoping that they would be done?
You know, it was a long process. It was a very detailed process for 5 months where We interviewed different candidates. We had lots of meeting and looking at everything what we put in there, from the interviews directly with Olaf to the talks, to workshops, to the data. It really looked for us that this is a really, really promising connection and that it really will work out. But sometimes in hiring an employee, in this case a football coach or a soccer coach, you never have the guarantee for it. And it happens in other fields of work as well, that the process looks great, everything looks great on paper, the talks went well, and there is just something which doesn't fit 100%. But in the end of the day, you know, it's an on-field matter. I will take full responsibility for that. And we also have to point out that this is not just a finger pointing at Olaf Melberg, not even a little bit. I think there is lots of other factors who played into that we did not get the results and the performances. And we all need to self-reflect when it comes to players, staff, myself, everybody included. But it's about to move forward, and it's definitely a very important decision to be made, you know, when we're looking into the next head coach. So definitely something to put our heads together to analyze and do better the next time.
The team has been really good defensively, has not been very good from an offensive standpoint. You've already spoken about, you know, putting a product on the field that is going to be entertaining to watch. Can you speak through that a little bit and what that's going to look like? And do you have to give up a little bit defensively to be a team that maybe can go out and have the ability to score some more goals?
You know, if I look at that, I have to disagree a little bit, because you're right. We started off defensively extremely well, which we didn't score many goals, but we didn't concede at all. We looked defensively extremely stable, but we didn't create that many chances. So it was a very, very high output of defensive play and a very low output success rate when it came to offensive play. But looking at what we did the last 11 games, I am also not really too happy the way we defended. We conceded plenty of goals. We conceded 2 goals, 3 goals, 4 goals on a regular base. And I cannot say anymore that the defensive shape, or we defended that well. And we also didn't really start to score that many more. So we went, even on that strength part we had early on, it went definitely a bit downhill. And that is where we have to go back to that City style, which I think made us into, you mentioned it, a super high intense team, a team which likes to entertain the fans, where, yeah, if you attack a lot and if you play the opponent's half, you sometimes get exposed on the other side. But we showed it last year towards the end of the season after the transfer window, where we scored plenty of goals, where we had a decent amount of wins, where we would have been definitely on a playoff spot with the season that started actually by then. And I think that's what we have to get back to. Our style, you know, I mean, it's easy to explain. We want to have some front foot defending, want to be proactive. We don't want to sit deep. We want to try to attack, already going to a press up in the opponent's half. If we lose the ball, get into a counter press. Want to be, I would say, a very difficult, even nasty team to play against, make it as uncomfortable for the opponent as it gets. And that was what made us in 2022 in Next Pro, in 2023 in the MLS, and since we exist in the Academy, always a team which was dangerous. And I think that's the basic points where we have to get back to.
You've been asked a million questions about John Hackworth, and I appreciated your answer today about you really need him shoulder to shoulder in his job, especially as you evaluate the roster. For many people listening to this right now, though, they just look at the cold, hard facts of when you needed an interim last year, it was him. This year, it's not him, but he's still getting assigned to coach a team because he goes to City 2. It almost feels like he's in a lesser position than he was last year. Can you explain to people listening why that's not true?
Oh, not even a little bit. Actually, John is as important as he can get. That's my right-hand man. That's a super important part of our sporting team as a technical director. You know, it's the bigger picture here for John Hackworth. I mean, he's an absolute specialist when it comes to U.S. soccer. It's an absolute specialist when it comes to structure, recruitment, academy, and I do need a lot of help. I mean, the hours we spend together is absolutely crazy. Not just with the first team, it's always about the bigger picture. And in that moment, for me now, coming up with a transfer period, which will be important, I need Hack to have Hack with me. The time he will invest with City 2, having Dale Shilly as an assistant plus another good coaching team around him, will be much less than focusing full-time on the first team. So we made that decision that David Critchley gets the opportunity, and I have to say he deserves the opportunity by being here in the club. He was actually the first coach I hired from Lufus by then. I remember the day when we met and spoke the first time about football, and I watched actually some of his U17 games with Lufus and said, you know, I really like your way of play. If we tweaked it a little bit here and there, I think that could be a great match. And I hired him a few weeks later. He's a big fan, a big believer in what we do. And somehow he eats, sleeps, drinks, and lives exactly that City style. And I think you see that week in, week out when he coaches City 2. It is extremely entertaining.
Yeah.
You see plenty of goals. You see plenty of action. And you see a lot of positivity on the field. You see a lot of life on within the players. There is always some fire out there. And that is why I think David is for us at this moment in time the perfect guy. You know, he's one of our own. Again, an internal guy, a kid of the first hour, and I'm so proud and so happy for him that he get that opportunity.
How quickly, what's the process? Because City 2, you're right, they've been so entertaining. They've been so fun this year. What's the process like to get City to look more like the style of play that we've seen from City 2 with Critchley in charge?
Yeah, if I go back into the summer of 2024, we basically have the same squad available, minus injuries, of course. We added Timo Baumgartl, which starts a good number of players, very experienced, playing Champions League for Eindhoven. We added with Konrad Wallem, a player who played everything so far, also a high-intensity player. So all the other guys are literally played already exactly in that style for years. Some of them came from Germany or from other countries, played in that style for many years. So this is not an adjustment period. I'm worried about it at all. They went on the field yesterday and they started, and it looked within minutes that the guys knew exactly what they were asked for. That was the way they used to play before, also in other teams. So that kind of new impulse, I don't see it at all as the danger. The players are confused and don't know what to do. It's very straightforward. It's a very direct playing style. It's exactly what people know within the changing room. It's what people know within the club. And most of the people, it's exactly also what people know in the stadium. And that's how we're going to play again.
Just a couple more minutes with Lutz Fansfield, sporting director for City SC. How important is kind of the interpersonal relationship type of stuff between coach and players? I know a lot has been made that players have been able to communicate with you guys on what's going on. These players, I'm sure, have to feel like they have a coaching staff that believes in them. When it comes to Critchley, can you talk to me through just kind of the importance of the off the pitch stuff when it comes to those type of relationships?
Yeah, I think the mental part plays a huge role. But, you know, but David Critchley is not a stranger to our players, because he was with us in the preseason camp with Olaf and all the other guys in Florida. He was watching a lot of sessions in recent months. So he knows a player. He have already an existing relationship with most of the players. Plus, we had guys like Edu Löwen, like Baumgartl, and many other guys playing a few games for City 2 to get match fitness. So there is a very good communication. It was already there before he got named interim head coach or caretaker manager. So I think, I tell you, for me, it's more than 50% to have that relationship, to give the players the belief that they have good quality, that they are top players, that they can actually do the job out there on the field. This is super important. I think we need that positive approach, that the players will work hard together. They come together as a unit. You know, the time of moaning and being unhappy and finger pointing needs to be gone. And I think David made it very clear yesterday in his first team talk what is expected, not just on the field tactically, but also off the field, how the interaction between players and coaching staff has to be. And as I said, he's a young coach, but he really knows how to speak, how to present himself, and I think the players really appreciate that.
Final question for Lutz Fansteel. Is there a scenario where a new full-time coach is in place even before this season comes to an end?
You know, I want to think from game to game. That is the most important thing right now. You know, for us, it's important now that we win. We have goals, but obviously we have to shave them down a little bit. And that's why I think thinking from weekend to weekend is the most important part now. We cannot rely anymore on a hard-fought draw, on a dirty 0-0, or just like picking up a point here or there. We need to win. That's as simple as it is. If we want to have a chance to achieve our goals, we need to get out there, especially at home, win our games, no questions asked. And I think that is how also David approaches it. I mean, for me, you know, as I said, I want to win as many games as possible. And if David Critchley is in charge for as many wins as possible, great. But on the other hand, we definitely also will look into the coaching market. We have to assess the situation. What is out there? Is somebody out there who fits in our way of play? And then we will assess the situation in the weeks to come.
Lutz, thank you so much for taking the time on a busy day. We really, really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much.
That is Lutz Vandersteel. He is the sporting director for City SC. We'll take a break. Have more in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Now, back to the Strike Zone, presented by Graybar on the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
We're back at it here on the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, starting to wrap things up, but don't go anywhere. On the way next, we are going to have City Spotlight. Jen Cease is going to be in studio to host that up until 9 o'clock this evening. She is going to have an exclusive conversation with City SC President Diego Gigliani as he'll give his thoughts on everything. We got to talk with Lutz Vandersteel just a little while ago. Look, this has been a really stressful time for everybody over at City. The last thing they wanted to have happen was go through another coaching change. And there is, you know, you can certainly look at the culpability and what's going on and the decisions that are made. And we've addressed those things for sure. But I got to give a lot of credit to the organization because for them to provide, you know, Lutz to me and Diego to Jen and just everything that's going on, it's I really appreciate them. So they've got messaging that they want to get out, and we'll help them with that. We'll give our takes on everything that's going on as well. But Jen's got a lot going on coming up on City Spotlight, as she's going to talk through everything that has happened here leading into and since the coaching change and why the change was made and what to expect moving forward. So certainly you'll want to be tuned in for that. Speaking of wanting to be tuned in, you'll want to be tuned in coming up tomorrow evening. What's on Deck is presented by Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best. The Cardinals tomorrow, they are set to open up a series in Arlington as they are going to take on the Texas Rangers. Matthew Liberatore is going to make the start tonight for the Cardinals, 3-3 and a 2.73 ERA. Cardinals, if they can take two or three from the Rangers over the weekend, that's one heck of a road trip. They just got done taking two of three from Baltimore. So tomorrow night's game is going to start at 7:05. That means coverage begins at 6:10. Really, coverage begins at 5 o'clock with the Redbird Rush Hour, but our network Cardinals broadcast will officially begin at 6:10 coming up tomorrow evening. We have had just a packed show. Thanks to all of my guests who have been on the show today. Hopefully you have been able to enjoy it. If you ever miss anything, you can always head to the Sports Open Line podcast and check that out for yourself, and all the interviews and everything that we had on any given night available for you right there. So you can always relive Sports Open Line through the podcast. That is going to do it for the show tonight. Thanks for being tuned in. City Spotlight with Jen Cease on the way next. Don't go anywhere. You've been listening to a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.